Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
It's the Mac Show.
Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Macintosh. There's not a lot gone on, but then again, there never is. So instead, we're going to drink beer and shoot the breeze and have loads of fun with the core team, as it were. The usual suspects. Starting top left, Don McAllister. How you doing, mate?
Good afternoon. I'm fine. It has been very quiet, hasn't it?
There's not even much rumour this week.
Unnervingly quiet, yeah. But I'm away next week, so it'll all kick off then when I'm away, so... What can you do?
Are you on another cruise or
No, just taking some time off, quality time, just visiting some friends and stuff. So
Blimineck. So you're not here next week is what you're saying?
No, I should be back for next Friday.
Okay.
Get back in on the Thursday, I think so.
Excellent. How's the screencast online verse?
It's going very well. Yeah, we had the new magazine came out at the end of last month and we're forging ahead on all fronts. It's going well.
What was the conference you were at this week?
Oh, NSConf. It's a developers conference that was down in Leicester. But unfortunately, I had to come back early, so I missed half of it. But no, it's a great conference. It's run by
Scott. It looks good.
Yeah, it's if you go over to developer.tv, the guy over there, Scotty, he does some developer tutorials and stuff. And it's a really good community now, actually. And it's sort of turning out to be like the WWDC for Europe because people travel from all over Europe to get to it now. And lots of Americans come over for it as well. And he's moved to a new venue. The problem was with it before was it was in a relatively small venue and they used to sell out within like half an hour. But he's got a new venue in Leicester, a place called the Athena, which is like an Art Deco theatre. And it's a great venue. And it looks as though he's been able to like double the attendance. So there was like 300 people there this year.
Are you going to see You Exposed? Have you heard of that one?
No, I've not heard of
that one. At Covent Garden. And I've got an invitation from 12 South to go to it. Oh, so right. I've registered this morning. See You Exposed.
See,
letter C, letter U, exposed. Mm. It's at London at Covent Garden.
Sounds interesting.
In the film theatre thingy. It's good. I'm going to go try it. Because Andrew from 12 South is going to be there with his partner who started 12 South, the founders. So I'm going to have a chat with them. And
they're lovely.
They are. They sound lovely. After he told me off for telling him that this stuff was a piece of crap.
Well, you know.
And he's given us a pile of stuff since. No, you don't want to see me exposed chat room. Absolutely not. Next to Don, Mr. Internet Outage Boy, Carl Swagger.
Sorry, I've just got this whole idea of You Exposed. I'm sweating now. Sorry.
Too right.
Go ahead.
Jesus. I'm sweating. How you been?
Oh, I'm well. I've got internet back, so, you know, it can't be too bad.
It's crystal clear, except, mate. Looks great.
Well, yeah, it's pretty good, yeah. Except for last weekend. It was funny because I got sicker than crap last weekend. It's like Friday was just a complete load of crap. Internet crapped out, and then I crapped out, literally, for 8 hours.
You're the only one with lip sync, and you're in the friggin' Philippines.
Thank you. We're very proud over here.
We're proud of our lip sync.
Yes.
Excellent. Beneath him, Kelly Gamont. How you doing, girl?
Hey, everybody.
You've got about a 3-second lag for some reason on your lip sync, so I have no idea where this takes place. No, it's not you. It's probably me at this end, but never mind. How have you been? You're back at the mom's. What's the story?
Yeah, well, I came back this morning to get another truckload of stuff to take over to the new house.
Right.
So scheduling, I just decided it was easier to set up here and hang out with you guys from here instead of from there and then try and come during worse traffic.
How far is the drive? Because it's 7:30 a.m. for you.
Yeah, it's like 25 minutes.
Oh, it's not too bad.
I thought
it was like 2 hours or something stupid.
Oh, no. Nothing like that.
Returning from his expedition with the boys, William Green.
My cultural expedition?
Yes. You sat under the stars, you philosophised and put the world to rights.
We sort of did that.
I heard you got pissed.
We sort of played poker and played pool and got drunk and then sort of collapsed and then got up in the morning again. Did that twice.
Good.
So, in many ways, it was cultural, was it?
Yeah, now we've had an email.
I always don't like, but this is always a bad point. Every time you kick off and we have an email or we've had a review, I think, oh, Christ, here we go. That that green, he's an arse.
I haven't even got to reviews yet, mate. Steady on. Someone sent an email, and I can't find the flinging email now, but it was basically on the lines of, didn't Will Green promise you all £100 each if he hadn't put the podcast up within 3 weeks? And I can't help but noticing that there isn't a podcast gone up, and it's like a month and a half now. I'm figuring you're £500 down, dude.
Well, I did. The gentleman tweeted me as well, and I promised I would. I'd send him £500 worth of Woolworths vouchers.
Woolworths vouchers weren't worth £500 when before they went bust.
And then they collapsed, and so I've all got all these forged Woolworths vouchers I've got nothing to do with. So I'll send him.
So you forged Woolworths vouchers? Are you openly admitting to this now?
No,
absolutely not. Not a chance. No. And last but by no means least, Dr. Happy Mac with swarthy complexion. How the devil are you?
Swarthy?
Yeah, you look...
Oh, this bit.
Yeah, swarthy. Yeah. I've got to say, with your hair spiky, you look like a bit of a bog brush.
It's the 80s.
Ah.
The 80s. Everything about me...
Catch a goo-goo.
Hairstyle to my jacket, to everything from now on is retro.
Absolutely.
The retro Mac. That's me.
Dr. Retro. Catch a goo-goo.
I love it.
Shy, shy. So
is that the song? Houses, they're going to say, but every time I try and do this, my computer freezes and this. And I'm going to say, OS 8, get it on there. All your problems will be fixed. I've got the floppy disks here. Here we go.
Dr. Happy Mac is Lamar, says John.
Even mine came on a CD.
It did, didn't it? It was OS 7.5 was the last one that came on floppies.
7.5 was the last. Even 7.6, I think, was disk.
Yeah, 7.5 floppies. Oh, but in that case, they're not getting OS 8 then. They're getting 7.5.3.
Jolly good.
Come on, give them 7.5.5. It doesn't have any extra bugs.
Go ahead, Will.
Sorry. The reason they released OS 8, there was some sort of agreement they had to tie themselves into to get a certain amount of versions of OS 8, of, you know, the Mac OS 8. And so... OS 8 is actually OS 7.9.9 or whatever, and it was just a bit of a con from Steve Jobs' point of view.
That's a long line of cons.
The good old days.
Tune in next week for the next episode of the British Tech Network Retro Mac Show.
Retro Mac. It is interesting. It is interesting.
Batwench in the chat. Chat room says that now you've done Lamar this week, DHM, please could you do Flock of Seagulls next week?
No, next week I'm booked to do Phil Oakey from the Human League in the one across one eye styling.
Right.
I would love a photograph of you. Something to remind me.
Oh.
We've had some reviews. Thank you very much to those people that have bothered to write reviews. It makes a huge difference to us. If you'd like to send us a review, then please put it in iTunes. Don't just do the 5-star rating thing. Please put a written review in because it's fantastic. Adam JP writes, great guests, great host, great topics and discussions. And Will Green, who could complain? Always listening to the show, never miss an episode. Stan to Stan says, need something to listen to while I was at the gym. I found it. I can't go to work without a daily dose of Mac Show. We only do one a week, mate. We'll keep up the tangents as well, please. Not sure about the starfish, though. I don't get the starfish reference, but never mind. Glenn BTN says, only recently found this podcast after hearing about it on Maccast. Great fun to listen to, and even better watching the live stream. Usually going off a bit off topic, but hey, it's all part of the fun. It's a great way to start the weekend. Keep up the good work, all. Robster says, I have two must-listen-to Apple podcasts. One is Mac Geek Gab, and I never heard of it. And the other is Mac Show. Highly entertaining. The team really seems to be enjoying themselves whilst imparting knowledge and information. It's all an act. And a great professional lineup of contributors and Will Green. Jason says, this is a great relaxed podcast that covers all of the news for the week in Apple, but also covers apps and other cool things found, hosted by the easy to listen to Ewan Rankin. Thank you. Ah, who also brings his photo knowledge to the mix. I don't remember that. DMC and DHM and Kyle are all great. And Will Green always makes the podcast fun. Loving his current pro-Google approach to things. Well done, Kelly, as well. Great work. One of the first podcasts I listen to each week. Mark Anthony Wood says, brilliant, a lot of useful Apple Mac news and discussions interjected with some not wholly relevant chat, but somehow, amazingly, it just works. Yes, I'm the guy that happened to bump into Dr. Happy Mac the other week in Cirencester, and please tell him I'd be very happy to sign his autographed book for an agreeable fee. Anyway, I just want to say I love the podcast. Thank you very much. And Dodgy DJ says, what a brilliant way to find out there's no Mac news each week. What would I do without it? My favourite thing to do with the podcast is to miss a few weeks just before a keynote and then listen to the predictions from the panel after the cat's out of the bag. It really makes me laugh. Seriously, though, thank you for a great podcast. Despite Mr. Green's tangents, it's fun and informative. Some good tips and the cool picks are great as well. Keep up the good work.
Is that it?
That's it, mate.
I feel relieved now.
You got off light.
Yeah.
Mate, I told you people love the tangents.
Yeah, but, you know, that's good. I'm happy now.
People love the tangents. Love the tangents. Gotta love the tangents. We've had a question as well. It was actually a question that was sent into the big show for Sarah to answer, because Sarah Gray, who does the sysadmin for the website and so on, she deals with Ubuntu a lot, and she used to really love Ubuntu. She's gone on to Mint now, though. But the question was, I know you're not a fan of Ubuntu anymore, Sarah, but I'd like to try it out. I'm an avid Mac user, but I like the look of the new Ubuntu OS. So what I want to do is install it on an external hard drive and run it from there. But I'm worried that installing it could or would screw up the Mac system. Can I install it to an external hard drive without doing damage to my existing Mac? And if not, and if it's okay, how would I go about doing this? And I thought, well, that's probably a question better answered by you guys.
What I would do is jump in with a big fat USB stick, and you probably don't even need an external hard drive, and just go Linux on a stick. And it's been a while, and I can't remember what flavor it was, but I've done a couple of flavors of that. And I used to use it for Windows troubleshooting. You probably have to format it as a Windows formatted disk, whether it's XFAT or NTFS. As long as you don't need to do any maintenance, you probably are okay with NTFS. I don't remember how much Unix cares about the file format on the drive anymore, but you can get like a 32 gigabyte USB drive for
cheap as chips. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and it doesn't even take that much. I mean, I use, now I'm totally blanking on the name of them, but I can see it. SanDisk, 8 giggers as my external recovery partition. So if I need to boot up, if there's something absolutely irrevocably wrong with my computer, I can always poke that in the side and boot up that way. So I'm pretty familiar with doing it that direction. And it's actually, for the most part, it works pretty well. And if you work it right, you can partition, especially if you've got a big fat hard drive that you're not using for anything else anyway. Partition it and put a couple different flavors of Linux on it and see what you think.
Anyone else got anything to add to that? I mean,
probably the USB stick, although it's cheap. They just it's a bit slow. I think probably maybe Spring, especially if you're going to put multiple flavors on. I think maybe Spring for a cheap small drive. I just find that anything that goes on USB stick, it's just ruins the experience because it's so slow.
Unless it's USB 3, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
That's true. Although I'll say that I've done what Kelly's done, and I've ran it from USB stick, and I didn't really have any problems. That's using a Mac Mini with four gigs of RAM.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, booting from my iPod was a little pokey, you know, when I would do that with old flavors of OS X. But by and large, Linux operating systems tend to be a little bit lighter weight because they're not pushing all kinds of high end graphics. There's just some graphics, so it's actually gotten a lot better, I think, to do it on a stick than it has most other ways. If you have a drive that isn't doing anything else, I would say go for it. But
the main thing is you're not going to break your Mac or do any damage to the main drive of your Mac at all. As long as you just pull the stick out, the Mac's going to restart and you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
As long as you don't go stomping through the files that are on your internal hard drive.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you could always accidentally delete all of your system files on your system drive. So
there's no undo. The act of of configuring an external drive, the act of installing the operating system, if you whatever you're doing to set those things up, that stuff isn't going to do anything to your computer. Usually the trickiest bit is to make sure that you hold down the option key once you plug in the USB stick so that you get the option of which way you want to boot. That's usually about it.
Will, you got something to say?
Well, the way I always used to do it is make sure I hadn't backed up for about 6 months, get pissed on a Saturday night, and think, I'll have a go at this. Back in the CD and just click next, and jobs are good. And that's my advice.
We should have let him go first to give the Hollywood Squares answer, and then the rest of us could have followed.
I have done that. I've got to be honest. I have done that.
Has anyone got a time code on that?
No.
Tonight
I've got to get the fuck out.
Does data really matter? we only live one life, don't we?
Absolutely.
I mean, really, let's be honest. I mean, the computer is one thing, but you know, our flesh and blood is more important than that, and our children. Mm. So,
I'm struggling to think. Is there anything on your computer that you would really miss? Anything?
There's nothing in his head he'd really miss.
Is there anything that your computer would really miss?
No, I mean, not like, I mean, compared to like a sunrise or holding your children's hand or, you know, a good beer.
That's the point I'm making.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point I'm making. If you lost your computer and you hadn't backed up and it came to like 2 months down the road, and as you say, you know, seeing a sunrise or holding your children's hand, which bit is the most valuable? It's obviously the living real life. So
on your deathbed, not having run Ubuntu on your Mac, will that be the negative? Yeah,
I just took it in the river. I wouldn't bother with it. Throw it in the river and run off to a remote Scottish island.
Chat rooms.
So it's just another operating system that's going to bring you down.
Yes,
you're going to be. You'll find fault with it. You'll hate it. You'll be upset at some point. Exactly.
Yeah.
Chat rooms often one. Oh God, blimey! Not do it. Don't do it on NTFS. Says Ron Mac, whatever you do. Running Ubuntu on a Mac as a separate system is useful. VMware type thing is good, but it's a bit pricey if you want. I've got to say, if you've got VirtualBox, Glenn mentions VirtualBox as well in the chat room. I've used VirtualBox a couple of times, put Windows on it and put Ubuntu on, and it runs smooth as silk. And you can specify your hard drive size. So you can say, right, I'm going to be 10 gig and that's it. So it's not hawking your system. Yes, you're running the two at the same time, so it'll slow stuff down a bit and maybe take a few cycles. But Ubuntu, like you say, it's pretty lightweight. It'll run pretty well on VirtualBox, and VirtualBox is free. Why would you not go for VirtualBox, and why would you go for an external drive? Because I don't think there's a corruption.
If you go for 7.5.3 on floppy disks, then you don't even get the internet anymore or your email.
I think we're of the same mind here, you know.
Then everything's gone. All your data's gone. The internet's not there. No Wi-Fi, no email. Brilliant.
No email.
You can write your letters. You can install, if monks had Macs, the
best piece of Mac. And Mist. I think you can run Mist on it.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yep. And that funny HyperCard porn.
I was going to say HyperCard porn. That was my next question.
Yeah.
Will the HyperCard porn game run on it?
Done.
Sorted. Right, thanks for the advice. Don, have you got anything sensible to add?
Not really. No, either USB stick or a virtual machine. As you say, that virtual box is that's free, isn't it, the virtual box thing?
I mean, a lot of the sticks are running at 60 gigabits a second now, or megabits a second, so that, you know, they're fair enough for a basic file swap, surely.
Yeah, and people just really want to have a look at it and see how it works. They probably only want to play for a day or two, so it's no big deal.
I have found that whenever I have trouble with something that I'm running virtualized, whatever the mechanism is I'm using to run it, whether it's Parallels or Fusion or VirtualBox or anything like that, I always find that the problem I end up having is something was misconfigured in the virtualization software, not within the thing itself. Yeah. So if you really just want to test it out, excuse me, you'll probably spend less time throwing it on a USB stick and then booting it up.
Yeah.
And Monkey Island.
Monkey Island. Thanks, man.
Put that on.
Yes.
John in the chat room says, my Windows 7 runs faster in the VM than it does on the PC that I've got.
PC Magazine did a thing right after the Mac Mini was able to natively run once they released Boot Camp. PC Magazine took a Mac Mini and they ran Windows 7 on it, and they ran Windows 7 on something else, and it came out to be more reliable on the Mac Mini than it did on the other machine that was like an HP or Dell or something that would was designed to run Windows 7 in the first place.
The fastest machine for about 2 years ago, the fastest machine to run Windows 7 when it was launched was MacBook Pro.
I'm not surprised.
That doesn't surprise me at
Teresa
all.
Teresa said, I didn't realize VirtualBox ran on a Mac. I've only got one on my Windows machine. There you go. You live and you learn. You should listen to this show to learn interesting stuff like that. Superb. We are fonts of knowledge.
Also, apart from being free with VirtualBox, because you're not using Parallels, you don't have to cut your soul into tiny pieces and eat it every day.
Someone wrote in the other week saying we were a bunch of utter fonts. I'm sure of it. I think it was fonts anyway. Right, the week in Mac, what's been going off?
Yes.
Lead us through.
Well, now here's the thing, because there's been discussions between Intel and Apple over provision of chips for the future. Now, there's Apple and Intel have reportedly discussed a deal for production of future iPhone and iPad chips. So, effectively, they're committing to the production of the iOS chips for certainly the immediate future. The question just begs whether they're going to continue in the desktop vein with just using the standard chips, or whether they're going to something that's a bit more customised, or whether Apple are going to run away from Intel entirely on the desktop.
Yes.
They definitely are, Kyle.
I definitely think they are. For some reason, I don't even know if I believe this Intel story, to be honest with you. I just firmly believe that Apple will go a different direction. It's just in their DNA. It's what Apple does. And I cannot see, particularly with the iPads, with the iOS devices, I definitely don't see them. I don't see them in 2 or 3 years using or partnering with Intel. I see them doing their own stuff, and probably with the desktops too.
Forgive my ignorance here, but isn't the A6X chip made through Samsung?
Yeah, it's the fabbing, isn't it? It's not the design that they're presumably in discussion with Intel. It's the actual production of the chips, because Apple, farm that out to different people. And I think, I think it's currently Samsung who are the big chip producers for them. And, obviously they want to try and move away from that, or sort of negate the any issues that they might have in the future with Samsung. So
I'd have thought they'd have been better off. Apple would have been more likely to be cuddling up with AMD or somebody. I mean, Intel are...
Particularly on the iOS market.
Yeah, I mean, Intel, they make the chips... I don't think Intel see themselves as a fab company, and they've got a future producing their own chips and doing their own thing, whereas AMD are like, they must be looking around like a bunch of headless turkeys thinking, what the hell hit us? Where did that truck go? And I think, if anyone other than Samsung is looking for someone to shovel millions of chips through their slightly underused fab plants, it would be AMD.
It's very funny that DHM says that, because I actually thought, just recently, I thought in my mind, wouldn't it be funny if Apple invested bought AMD?
I've wondered that every so often when you start hearing like there's some big Intel story and then someone goes, and look over here, poor little AMD.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, somebody ought to pick them up. I've wondered if Apple would do it.
I do think that the issue with AMD, though, is that there are some... There's some cross-manufacturing agreements with AMD and Intel, isn't there? That AMD are allowed to manufacture Intel-compatible chips and vice versa. But if somebody bought AMD, then that agreement would fold, and then AMD and Intel would no longer be able to manufacture each other's chips.
So it's kind of like the Nazis and the Russians during 1943. Operation Barbarossa.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a mutual self-destruction pact that AMD and Intel have together that dates back like 25 years.
But which one's Stalin and which one's Hitler?
Both.
Oh, both. Okay, that's a fair point.
But haven't Apple got a big investment in ARM? And up until recently, the iPhone was and the iPads, and I don't know, maybe still be used the ARM chip. And there's been rumours for a long time now that the Mac's going to switch to ARM.
There's no ARM.
It sort of makes sense that if the two operating systems, iOS and OS X or OS 11 or whatever it's going to be called, are coming together, it sort of makes sense that they use the same chip architecture, or whatever you want to call it, to make things easy. So if anything, I see them going towards ARM, which is got to be, isn't it the lowest voltage, lowest heat, highest performance, and least battery sucking chip out there? Am I wrong in saying that?
That's not even a swear word, but the way you say it, Will, it makes it sound like it's a swear word. Thank you.
Well, he's swearing whether he's using a swear word or not.
Show me that sucking chip.
Yeah, damn sucking chip. I tell you what.
Oh, no.
I don't know. I might be wrong, but I think I'm fairly accurate with that.
And, well, ARM don't make anything for Apple at the moment.
ARM?
ARM don't.
No, well, I thought, was it the iPhone 4 that they ditched ARM and they changed it for the iPhone 5?
Might be. But it's Samsung are the producers of the Apple processor.
But they have got a lot of money invested in ARM. And they've used it historically from the iPhone 1 right up to sort of recent times. And there has been a lot of rumours that the Mac and stuff were moving to ARM. So it sort of makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, I don't think you've got any money in AMD at all. Or Intel.
That's a speculation, is what you're saying.
No, it's not speculation, but just from an investment point of view and a hard fact. No, hard fact. Hard facts is what I'm talking. I've been saying this for years.
Thank you, Judith
I've been
Chalmers. Talking
for a long time, and I've been saying this for years that that's the way it's going to go. And by jingo.
Isn't ARM the ones that are climbed into bed with Microsoft, though, on the low-end Surface tablet?
The Surface RT, is it?
There's got to be some exclusivity along with that, surely. You can't see those two sharing.
I'm a British, Johnny Ive's British, so that's it, really. That's all you need.
All right, then.
Oh, boy. I just... Kelly said that she couldn't stop laughing. She's got the giggles. And then I seen what Kelly wrote in the chat room, and now I can't stop. Sorry.
Okay.
Professional now.
No, because people watching the video can't see the chat room, so. No. But I can't read that
and
out.
That's why you should be joining us. No, you
can't. I can't read that out. Phil Schiller has sent out a tweet saying.
And there he goes.
What have I done?
No, I'm actively trying to do Kyle in live on the air, that's all.
Good on you. Phil Schiller sent out a tweet saying, go to fsecure.com, be safe out there. It's on the streets of, it was Hill Street Blues. There you go. So 2010, 2011, 2012, malware predictions and threat families by variants of platform. And Symbian was getting a good old kicking in 2010. Now they're not. And Android is the 3/4 of the malware out there is on the Android platform. Is this a bit of pride comes before a fall?
I saw something. Mm. Who was it? The BlackBerry guy who was saying Android is like having your front door and you don't know who's got the front door key to it. And I sort of agree with him, really. It's... There are security risks to it, aren't there?
And that's even from you, from the mouth of a man who's a pro-Google guy.
I am pro-Google, yeah, but you, like anything, really, you've got to appreciate the risks. And I sort of... I'm sure it's from a sales point of view. I think the advantages of Android are it's open and allows sort of freedom of development. But with that, there's always sort of, good parts and bad parts to it, and I think probably Android is the riskiest of the iOS OSs.
You know, it's what's funny about Android is, yeah, I mean, I think it is the most vulnerable, but I don't think iOS is exempt from it either. I think this is the connotation again that we live in this sort of universe. I think that universe is getting much, much smaller now that we're seeing this, that, you know, we feel safe in our Mac zone or our iOS zone. And I think that's not going to be the case here in 5 years as much, particularly with how many, you know, iPads and everything that's running iOS out there. It's very much a target. And honestly, if you want to be totally secure, just go get yourself an Ubuntu phone because you'll be the only one using it.
But I find interesting about this whole survey and the fact that Schiller's pointed towards it is the fact that it talks about the percentage but the percentage is actually based on the number of threat families that are out there. So if you look at the statistics for 2012, it's showing you 301 pieces of malware that are out there and the percentage across the OSs. And in terms of malware, there is a higher proportion of Android malware out there than there is any other operating system. But that's not an infection rate. That's a...
availability.
That's an availability. That's you know, this is what's out there, but it doesn't show who's contracted any of this at all. And that, you know how many of these are actually dealt with by upgrades to Android?
Well, here's the thing, though, is even if all of them are dealt with by upgrades to Android, here's the rub. At least in the U.S., at least in the United States, you are beholden to your carrier for whatever sort of updates you get. So I may have a phone on AT&T that's Android, and I may be able to get updates for it. If there's a big security hole and Google comes out with a patch and says, here's the update, and it's part of the Android operating system, my phone, my Samsung phone on AT&T may get that update. But someone else who has the exact same model on T-Mobile may not get that update. And to me, that is the piece that makes Android a non-starter for myself, because I would really like to have an open operating system. I'd like to try some other stuff. I'd like to do some different things. But I don't like that if I buy a phone today and a new version of Android comes out tomorrow, there is absolutely no guarantee that I'm going to get any kind of security update or a functionality update or any other kind of update for the phone that I have. And you're chained to that here for 2 years, sometimes three. And or I in 12 months, I can go pay $500 or $600 and get a new version. And I find that really frustrating. And I think if it were possible, I was having this discussion yesterday on app.net about how if the carriers would get out of the way, if each handset maker would stop wrapping their ugly, ugly, ugly skin around Android, Android itself at its core is not a bad OS. But by the time you deal with all the shenanigans of the hardware maker and the carrier, then it ends up being something that a lot of people just don't want to bother with. I'm not going to be able to pull it up, but there was a fragmentation thing about like the updates available for the most, the like five most popular Android devices. It was like a year or two ago. There was a graphic of here's all the different flavors of updates available for all these Android devices. And then it said iPhone 4, iPhone 3GS, iPhone 3G. And it was just a green bar all the way across the... all the way across, because it was set up that way. You know, when Apple does have tight control over everything, but I also know that if there's a security update while I'm under contract, I'm going to get it.
I think the thing... Go on.
Kurt, you mentioned that thingy, that... what do you call it?
You need to narrow it down.
...thing or something. And you gave me a license thing for it. What is that all about, then?
You described the... Okay, thank you.
I don't know. I mentioned a bunch of things there. I kind of got on a roll. So if you mean app.net, it's microblogging. It's sort of like Twitter, but there are less Justin Bieber fans there.
It's not now. It's free, there aren't.
There's 256 characters instead of 140 as well. So.
But it's got applications on it and stuff. I couldn't figure it out. But it only seems to be half a dozen applications.
No, they're client hosts, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all just client apps. It's not something... It's just if you don't want to go to the website, much like Twitter, if you don't want to stare at the webpage all day long, there are little bits of software you can use instead, and you can look at app.net that way.
Yes.
But they have started off just as a sort of a Twitter clone, but it's more of a platform. There's APIs to do all sorts of... There's file sharing in there, file storage, and there's lots of other sort of... infrastructure that they can put in place. So they're going to build it out. They're going to build it out to be something more than Twitter. And other applications are going to use it for other things as well. So although it looks a bit like Twitter now, it's 12 months from now, it'll be a whole different sort of platform.
People will reply to you on it.
So I made what I'm seeing happen here is I made some valid points about Android, and now we're talking about app.
No, we're not. We're going back to Android. So... My point would be here that if you look at the manufacturer of an OS has a vested interest in ensuring that OS is secure, and it puts effort and funds and R&D into making it secure. Apple will do that because they have that closed environment with the App Store and iOS, but the problem that you've got is that the people that are wrapping Android up and not implementing security updates that are coming through from Android are the people that don't lose anything by your phone being hacked. So your carrier is not going to lose anything because your credit card details have gone to someone else because you used them on your iPad or something like that, or on your or on your tablet or on your phone. So where's the incentive on those people to update the security features from Android as they happen? Which is why this thing's at 75%.
Well, that and the fact that there's very little control over what goes in the app stores. So there are a few different places you can get apps from, and there's not a, there's, to my knowledge, now I'm not an Android developer, but my, to my knowledge, all it really takes to get an app in an Android store is a valid username and password, and then say, I'm a developer, here's my app.
Yeah, but my,
that's what I've been led to understand.
But even so then, my point was that, that who has the vested interest in the security of the application? It's Google, or the OS, it's Google. Who has the responsibility of ensuring the distribution of the security? It's the carriers, and the carriers don't give a shit.
They don't care. No.
Because, but Apple do give a toss, so Apple will update, they will pass security code on, they will let you control yourself. It's not down to the carriers. That's the disconnect, because the carriers have no incentive to stay secure.
Plus, it's all in one place with Apple. It's like, it's your, everybody's phones. It's one company, one update, one fix, one patch. And with Android, it's like, oh, Verizon are going to patch this. Oh, you know, O2 are going to patch this. Vodafone aren't going to patch this. Orange are going to do something completely different. So, you know, it's kind of, you do get a bit of luck of the draw.
Well, it's reputation as well, isn't it? Because if something goes AWOL on an Android phone, you know, it's, is it the carrier? Is it Android? Is it, you know, the application? Whereas if something goes wrong on the iPhone, whether it be with an application or with the OS or with the actual hardware, it's the iPhone. So, you know, it, it gets hit from all sides. So it's unusual that, that Phil Schiller would put out that tweet. I think it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek that he would actually sort of... but I think he's a bit mischievous, his old Phil Schiller, I think. I think he likes to...
I also did like the Clever Hill Street Blues reference.
The whole world has... we've got into this economic sort of pit. And it's quite nice, really, that, that somebody steals your credit card details and you think, well, good luck with that, then. you want to put a bit of money in there. That would help. Out. It's that there is a plus side to nobody having any money. But it doesn't really matter if they steal your details. Or is that just me?
It kind of does, because if you've let the details out, Will, you're knackered because your bank won't honour it. The insurance doesn't cover it. So.
Yeah, but I said there's nothing there to get.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. If you're skint,
you're
skint.
Rather smug.
It's your overdraft.
I think a lot of it has to do, too, and I think we have to thank Steve for this, was when he went to sell the iPhone to the carriers. This is how you're going to do it. Plain and simple. Yes. You're not going to screw with it. You're not going to do it. We're in charge of it. We're giving you the license to the phone. That's just the way it is. Google, on the other hand, it's just kind of just, oh, here you go. Have fun. You know, whatever you guys want to do with it. It's open source. It's free. You want to put crap on it, put crap on it. We don't give a shit, you know, really.
And
so
that to me is the same that's the same frustration I have with Windows, because I'm a reasonably proficient technical person. I can sit down in front of an operating system and figure it out. I should not have to have a learning curve if I sit down in front of Windows 7 on my stepdad's, what did he just buy? Samsung laptop. And it should, like, once I figure out where everything is, if I go help someone else with their Toshiba laptop, it should not be a completely different Windows experience. And yet it mostly is. And that's the thing to me that I have very little patience for with Windows, is all the BS that gets installed because you bought it from HP, because you bought it from Dell, because you bought it from whoever.
Bloatware. Yeah, all that bloatware, yeah.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. And I have the same problem, like, in my previous life, when I was doing corporate IT, there were people who wanted Android for a number of reasons. It was either, you know, Android is open and Apple is dumb, or it was, sometimes it was logistical. It was still when AT&T was the only one with an iPhone. And people would say, I have no reception. So in order to get my email, I have to be on Verizon. And so I need, you know, an Android device. And we would try all these different flavors of Android devices. And every time I picked one up, even though it was technically the same version number, everything was different. The layout was different. The icons were different. size of the screen, the size of the screens were sometimes different. The buttons were in different places, and it made it really hard to try to compare things. It was sort of like appliance shopping or mattress shopping, where you can't really compare anything because everybody makes exclusive stuff for different stores. So there is no real head-to-head comparison because they're all a tiny bit different.
Mm.
And so it was endlessly frustrating.
What's that, Will?
What's that, Will?
Bloatware would be a good name for a clothing.
For certain members of the population, maybe. Roku has released the Roku 3. It's out there. It looks shiny. It's piano black. It's got motion gestures on its controller. And it's also got a plug-in earphones for its controller as well, so you can be sat down and hear it just for yourself as well. I got to say, when I looked at that, I was like, wow, A, it's not got a front row interface. Holy shit, Apple, you've still got the front row interface, even on the new version. And I've got, there's a bit of me looking at this thing thinking, if I can stream from iTunes from this, if I can find a way of streaming out from the desktop to this, this looks far better than anything Apple's got to offer. At the moment, I'm looking at Apple TV thinking, if you don't update this in the next month, I could be gone.
I'll say that to an extent, but I mean, are we sure that Roku is actually streaming, say, bought content from the iTunes store?
No, it's not doing anything with iTunes. It's doing Netflix, Amazon, Hulu Plus, Crackle,
that's the
HBO.
That's where Apple's got your ass, is because you bought all your TV shows from the iTunes store, and now you need the Apple TV to get it on your
TV.
But not all of them, because there's HBO Go on here, and Plex.
There's loads on here.
Plex, hey, well, you're in luck, man.
Woo!
So, I know that with Plex, you can configure it so that you could see a lot more stuff than just the channels that are available to you. And I was never able to get XBMC working properly on my Apple TV anyway when I jailbroke it. So, we have what's the other one with the little green guy on it that's not Android? Boxy Box. We have a Boxy.
Boxy.
And it's a weird looking box. This is kind of cool. I'm anti-piano black, but it'll do Netflix and Amazon Instant Video, which I find very interesting because I know that if you try to AirPlay Amazon Video off your iThing, according to Amazon, the licensing of that content does not allow you. You can get sound through the Apple TV, you can't get video through the Apple TV, and they say it's because their licensing won't let it be shown on a television. So I'm fascinated to see the Amazon Video icon on this Roku interface, these screenshots that I'm looking at.
I mean, they're talking here, there's 750 apps to go on the Roku box as it currently stands right now before you even get the 3 version out in April. This thing hits in April. It's priced exactly the same as the Apple TV at $99. Where is the rub for people to go with Apple over Hulu? You can buy Roku. Roku works beautifully in Britain. Booker in the chat room says, I've just watched Crackle on Roku, and the HD quality of the video was superb.
That's good, isn't it? But you've invested heavily in thingies.
Apple TV, I got 3 around the house, yeah.
It's almost in some ways, it's like all of the content providers have looked at iTunes and the dominance that iTunes has on the market. And even though in many ways Apple and iTunes probably rescued the music industry, they were like, got together and said, heaven forfend, we don't want Apple to rescue the movie industry as well. We need, you know, and let's all do our own thing again. And you've got this, I mean, there's so much, particularly over here, I know that Kelly and Carl probably don't know, but I mean, there's obviously Netflix on the Apple TV, there's all these boxes, plus there's you know, BBC iPlayer, now we've got Sky Plus Player, there's BT have got their own on-demand services, Love Film, you know, it's an endless stream of people trying, you know, it's such a fragmented market.
Yeah.
Jimmy the Greek says, why not have both? Wired for Flight says, there's no airplane on Roku 2, at least. Wired for Flight's obviously got flight on the brain. I think we're talking airplay as well, but I prefer no airplane. There's no airplane on Roku 2, no.
No, that's on Android. Airplane is on Android.
One star.
That's a big differentiator, though, for people with Macs and with iPhones and with iPads, isn't it, that you can't AirPlay? I mean, just how big a deal it will be in the future, I don't know, but you know, that's the big, other than the number of channels on there.
We had Chris Eschweiler on the Big Show last night, and Chris is a techie for events days. So basically he'll turn up and he'll put up AV equipment and coordinate your day and show you videos, etc., etc., when you want them. And he said the biggest thing in presentation at the moment is the Apple TV, because of AirPlay, because of that ability to just sling stuff over from iPads. You know, a presenter has an iPad and they just flick it and bang, it's on the screen and away it goes. You look at Stargazing that was on with Brian Cox and Dara Obion in the UK a couple of months back, and that was all iPad. Flicking through pictures on iPads on screens. It's what everyone wants to do. And the Roku is fantastic. It looks great. I'm seriously tempted. I'm not sure how big a pull AirPlay is over the fact of having all of the content that you currently get on your iPad, on your Apple TV anyway, and this 750 apps to add on to it.
In Britain,
I think it
though,
depends on what you're doing
seen,
with the thing you
hang
have.
Hang on, let's, Kelly. Just a sec, Kel. Go ahead, Will.
I was going to say, in Britain, on the Apple TV, you don't get BBC iPlayer, which is a biggie, isn't it? And with AirPlay, you can stream. I've just seen that they've updated the BBC iPlayer on the iPad now. You can stream your whatever you're watching from BBC iPlayer onto your Apple TV, and then put it in the background and get on with other tasks, which is something brand new and very clever, isn't it? So I did, and like Channel 5 or, you know, there's lots of, I suppose the thing is with something like this device, this Roku device, or even the Apple TV in some ways, it's being able to stream from your iPad, which is open for third-party traditional media like well, Netflix is on there already, but, you know, like Channel 5, Channel 4, ITV, whatever. You can watch that via the Apple TV on your TV. So I think the AirPlay is a huge, probably the biggest benefit of sticking with the Apple TV.
Kelly, you can say.
Well, I think it depends on what you do with it. Right now, we're in the midst of technologically planning out the new house. And one of the things we were looking at was which TV is the Apple TV going to get hooked up to? And part of the reason for that was because the primary use we have for it is AirPlay. And, you know, second only to if I want to watch Netflix and have it look really good, it comes out of the Apple TV way nicer than it does out of the TiVo. So if I want to use it, then what am I going to be using it for? And what we determined was that because the amp slash receiver downstairs, we have a Denon and it has AirPlay. You can just install it as like a software upgrade. So we got AirPlay on the amp for the big TV downstairs, which is where I was coming to you guys from last week with the bar. Mm. Big TV has an AirPlay connected receiver. So the Apple TV is actually going to go upstairs so that there's a place upstairs where if I want to listen to music on some nice speakers, I can do that upstairs or I can do that downstairs. And now it doesn't really matter because that's the primary use, that and Netflix. And I can do both of those on what is not like the TV where I sit down and watch and enjoy. Like if I want something on in the background, the Apple TV is a no-brainer for that. So I think it probably depends. And I do think, like you guys are talking about what's available, I think it depends on where you are.
Exactly,
I think Roku is going to kill in places that are not, I don't know if there's an official word for it, but the first wave stuff, when Apple debuts something new. Now you can get TV shows. They're available in these six places now. And then, you know, a month, 6 months, a year from now, you'll be able to get them in these other places. So Kyle is probably already sold on Roku box now.
No, I'm screwed over here.
Well, so
that's the thing with the Roku over here. I mean, we can't get anything on it over here. You can't really do anything with it because of, you know, proxy. You can't use Hulu over here. You can't do any of that. That's where an Apple TV personally for me comes into play, because if you have, say, a US account, which I do, and I have access to the latest television shows because I have a US account, which is great.
Regardless
but
of
I can't
IP.
Stream crap over here.
Screensavers? That'd be quite nice on your Roku device. Watch some screensavers for a bit.
But I think, that's something that's going to happen is really what it's going to come down to is who has content available to them and how. And what you're going to see, I think, and this is totally speculation, but I think what you're going to see is in places where Apple has not stepped up and not been, you know, first in new TV shows, it airs the day after, whatever. In those places, you're going to see a lot more Roku growth. If there are more options available on the Roku side, and in places where Apple TV is doing what is good, where the iTunes store is good, you're going to see that the Roku probably doesn't take off as much there because of where the content is coming from. And what I really wish would happen is that, and it's not because I have anything against Roku, but I wish that this would spectacularly fail so that the content companies would go back to Apple and make an actual deal, and then we wouldn't have this problem.
I don't think that's stopping it. I mean, you know, you guys have talked to, I get Kyle's viewpoint about it because it's slightly different because of being in Manila. But that you've got as a specific problem there, Kyle, doesn't apply to me.
No, of course not. No. I'm not saying I'm special.
No, with Roku, I mean. So, but you're saying about right. iTunes, you know, all that content that you purchased on iTunes, if you've purchased it and you click Show in Finder, that is a file that you can play on VLC. It is not constricted or constrained at all. It's as far as I can see, it's royalty-free at that point when you've downloaded it. I've got the Good Shepherd. I can watch that in VLC on my Mac. So there's no DRM on that. Now, if there's no DRM in that, that releases Apple, like that takes away the unique selling point of Apple TV for any other reason. So Roku have now got the ability to stream that file from whatever repository it is that they grab it from. But I can't see that if Apple TV doesn't change in the next 6 months, that there is any reason why you would choose Apple TV over Roku or over Boxy. It's got, you know, if you look at the leapfrog of technology, you know, one does one does another, and it's this is better, that's better. It's Apple's turn to jump at the minute, and they don't look. There's no rumors about Apple TV. There's no jump forwards in revolution of television at the moment from Apple.
Only even if you bought a load of stuff off the iTunes store, then you're knackered, aren't you?
No. If you've bought stuff off the iTunes store, everything that you have is in Finder and it is DRM free as a WMV file. You can rip it, you can watch it on VLC, you can do what the hell you like with it.
What? Films and TV?
Yep. I've got The Good Shepherd that I downloaded as a film. I paid for the film. I have it on my hard drive. It's in my movies folder and I can rip it. I can watch it in VLC. I can do anything I want with it.
Can you watch rubbishy basketball on this thing?
I'm sure there is some rubbish basketball out there, mate, yes.
Why do they bother with that? What a waste of time. Anything in Christ, you're on the Apple TV, that's where it's gone wrong. You should have a cricket channel on there.
Well, that'd be great.
What is the super-duper thing, though, on Apple TV? There are two apps that when they came to Apple TV, I knew tons of people who just completely freaked out about how awesome it was going to be. And they were as follows. MLB at bat and hockey.
Mm-hmm. And you get all those scores free of charge, and that's it.
Well, Kyle, you're not going to buy to that. No. That was meant for you.
You do have to subscribe to MLB at Bat. I think it's like $15 a year or something. But
no, you still get the scores. You just don't get the highlights.
Right. But the thing that people liked about at Bat was that it allowed them to watch more games through the subscription service than they would get through the regular television. And that, to me, is astounding because even though you're paying a bajillion dollars a month for a ridiculous number of cable channels, this is going to let you actually watch baseball, which if you're somebody who really enjoys baseball, is going to be the thing for you. And Major League Baseball is the same way. For people who are into Major League Baseball, they are into Major League Baseball. Like
hockey as well.
Walking up to someone in a Star Trek. Yeah. And it's like walking up to someone in a Star Trek shirt and saying, oh, I like Star Trek. And they reply to you in conversational Klingon. That's what it's like to talk to somebody who is a huge baseball fan or is a huge hockey fan. The people who pay for this, it is very, very serious business to them.
Yeah, I mean, chat room's gone hockey mad. Hockey.
Oh, it's the same thing over here. I mean, I'm a bit biased because everybody knows what I do over here. We work with NHL. NBA, but the thing is here, I mean, that is one of the major selling points, I would say, over here for for the, I would say, the more upscale market, because you need a faster internet connection and obviously to purchase the Apple TV, but is NBA League Pass. To have that on Apple TV over here, and because NBA is just huge in this country, it's a major thing for people over here, so that kind of content. I could see if Apple would ever score a deal with, say, like NFL Sunday Ticket or these kind of things.
Oh, it's done.
It's done, exactly. It's done, as far as stateside goes.
I'll tell you why, because one of the few things that people still watch live is sports. Everybody TiVos.
Is NFA then hockey or baseball then?
NBA is National Basketball Association.
That's basketball.
NHL is National Hockey League.
Yes.
And NBL is Major League Baseball. MLB, sorry, Major League Baseball. MLB. That's it, yeah.
So that's Carl, like the only thing.
NBA.
I will listen out for it then.
Well, you won't hear Carl's voice because he does the voiceovers.
We're here in the Philippines. Yes. Yes, indeed. That's me.
So I'll hunt you down and listen to you anyway.
Thank you.
He's famous.
Thank you very much.
He's the only famous one amongst us. Apart from Dr. Happy Mac, who gets stopped for his autograph in Sainsbury's.
That's a dodgy haircut you got there this week, DHM. What's going on there?
It's Limahl. This is Limahl homage.
Excuse me, I would like to take issue with the word Sainsbury's in that conversation. I live in Sancaster, and we don't have a Sainsbury's. We have a Waitrose.
Oh, sorry. So it means you pay more.
Yes. And we don't just have a Waitrose. We have Waitrose's flagship store in the UK.
Well, that's because there's nowhere else that's got a Waitrose. There's no
Birmingham. Waitrose and John Lewis, their profits over Christmas rocketed. And all their staff have been given a huge bonuses.
That, you know that snowman from the John Lewis advert? He lives in Cirencester.
Does he?
Hmm. He's obviously melted now, but...
I've seen the making of video. He's not really made of snow. It's all a big con.
I need a tumbleweed graphic to come across the screen when you buggers start.
Oh.
Jesus. This podcast and all the other drivel that's on this network is supported by UK2. This drivel would go away.
Without not the photo show, they weren't. You forgot them last
time.
Photo
show weren't, no. I was under pressure, mate. I've been doing it on my own for 2 weeks. the UK2.net people are fantastic. They keep us afloat. If you would like to support British Tech Network, you can A, give us a donation. Go to our homepage and there's a donations button there. We pay people to blog for us. We pay for subscriptions to things so that we can view things. So any money that you can give us would be gratefully appreciated and received. And it all goes back into the network. We don't drink any of it, I promise. I drink my own money, not yours.
Don't lie. That's
it's true.
Terrible,
it's true. It's true. Just click on the banner and you can submit as much money as you want and take the email address and you can just give us a single donation if you don't want to subscribe. And UK2 are the other people that support us. So please go to our sponsors page, click on their logo, buy their services, use their offer codes. You'll save yourself a fortune and they're really as good as anyone else that you see out there for service, better perhaps. And they're also certainly good enough on price. So by supporting them, you support us and you get discounts, which... you wouldn't get anywhere else. Support UK too, because they're fab. They support us. What on earth are you on, Gamont?
Okay, Kyle, we're even.
Kyle, pissing around behind the back of the sponsors logo. I'm going to tell UK too on you, and you're never coming back on this show again. Till next Friday, anyway. Kyle, hello. You bath plug.
No, I was. Oh my god.
Right, cool things. Don Muck.
Oh, right. My cool thing for this week is.
I'm going to be skint, aren't I?
My nice little iPad mini with a nice cover on. And it's a keyboard. One of the Logitech keyboards.
So it's exactly the same as the ultra thin keyboard, but smaller.
Yeah.
What's it like to type on? Because with my pudgy pork sausages, I might be struggling with
it. I mean, you wouldn't want to do a great big thesis on it or anything, to be honest. Whoops. And it also falls off if you don't.
It's not magnetised in the corner. Jeez.
No, it is.
Cheap it's just piece of crap.
No. It's okay. I mean, it's not fantastic.
Coolish.
But it's cool. It's great. It's not. It's dinky. But I like it. But yeah, it's exactly the same as the keys are slightly different. There's some extra keys, I think, and they rearrange the keys slightly. But it's just like the bigger brother. But it's for the iPad mini.
Excellent. I adore the Bigger Brother. It's probably my favorite iPad accessory of all the iPad accessories I've ever used.
It is. That's absolutely true. Very good.
So that's the Logitech Ultra Slim iPad Mini Cover, it's called. They don't call it.
Now, I know that money means nothing to you, Don. So that's £70.
£70.
It comes in white as well as black.
It does, apparently so. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I've got the little black iPad Mini, so I got the black one.
Excellent. Good choice. I like that. It's a good pick. Good pick. As long as I can type on it, but that's the
you can actually type on it. I mean, if you've got big fat fingers, it might be a bit difficult for you, but it takes a little bit of practice to get used to it. But it's usable.
Excellent. Good man. Right. Next one is who's next? Carl. Carl, what have you got for us?
Yeah. Just a freebie app. NetBot is what it is. It's from the makers of TweetBot.
And it works.
It works pretty well. For the iPad, I do like it on the iPad. I would say it's my choice for app.net on there. Courtesy of WinRider, I got invited into app.net. And then I decided to go ahead and pay for the service, and we'll try it out for a while. I'm still getting the hang of it. I still find myself going over to Twitter. But as far as posting to the servers, I like NetBot. It's free. It works well. And if you're familiar with TweetBot, get on it.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Good pick. I've used it as well, and it is excellent. Kelly, what do you have for a skill?
My pick is actually a Kickstarter that I helped to kickstart yesterday, so I will have one of these in the future. It's called Thermodo, and it's this little tiny thermometer that will plug into the headphone jack of your phone, and it will work on iPhone and iPad as well as Android. What it'll do when it's done is you plug it into the headphone jack, and it'll have an app, and the app will tell you what the temperature is right where you are. Not just what's nearby. It's not like a weather app where it tells you, oh, you know, it's 60 degrees and sunny at the weather station, which is, you know, 10 miles from where you are. This will tell you the temperature right exactly where you are. Mm. And it looked awesome, and so I kickstarted it. It comes in black and white at the moment, and it's got a little keychain clip for it, so you don't have to leave it in your phone all the time. It's pretty small. And it looks super convenient, and I thought it was neato. So I got the aluminum edition, which is $39 US. You can get a black one or a white one for $25 in the, again, US. And there's obviously bigger layers if you want to kickstart for more money. But some of them are very, very cool. It looks like something that is very neat. This is by a design company called RoboCat, who built a little app to tell you the weather or the temperature. And they've got like 2 million downloads of this free little weather app. And then they thought, you know, this tells you the weather at the nearest station. It would be cool if you could tell the weather right where you were standing. So this looks awesome. And as soon as I get one, I will show it to you guys.
Excellent.
It's a temperature gauge.
It's a temperature gauge for your iPhone. Yeah, it goes in the headphone jack.
Yeah. And it doesn't tell you the temperature of your phone. It tells you the temperature of where you're standing there.
Which is going to be influenced by the phone.
Oh, maybe. Depends how warm it is. But, yeah, I think it's super cool. And the thing with the Portland area is we have, and I'm sure this is probably part of the UK as well, we have a few, because of a bit of the interesting land formation around here, we get some weird microclimates. So there are parts of town where it's the first to freeze, it's the first place to snow, it's the first place... There's flooding. There's all these different parts of town that have sort of these different little climates. And so you can tell, like, what exactly it's going to be, what exactly it is. I mean, where it is you're standing. So if you know you're going someplace where it's freezing, where it's going to freeze, you know, it's super handy to have the thermometer with you.
Excellent.
You'll be there already, won't you? Be too late by then.
Well, you'll want to know. Here's the thing that to me is sort of, if you want to do this, you should do it sooner than later, because they are at their goal was $35,000 and they're at $89,000 right now, and they still have over a month left, 32 days left of pledging to Kickstarter.
Well,
so I only point that out because they may run out. There's usually only a certain number of awards at certain levels. So if you want to get in for $25, now's the time.
Excellent. Will, what have you got for us, mate?
I don't know.
Tube something.
Yes, I've got two of them. I have. Two for the price of one. Like anybody, well, you know, I used to live in London, and I had this flat, crappy flat in London, and I was single, and so I used to finish work. I used to work on Tottenham Court Road and cycle home, and then cook my... I could only cook two things, well, three things. Spaghetti bolognese, pizza or curry. So it would be one of those three things. And I'd be, you know, toiling away in my crappy bedsit. Well, it wasn't too bad, actually. It was quite a nice bedsit. It was all right. I shagged my neighbour. No, edit that out, would you?
And you've given me enough editing this week, bollocks.
Okay, fair enough. I used to have a map.
That's what you get for spinning your bloody story out and trying to make the most of it. You should have cut to the chase, dude.
No, it makes a big difference. I used to have a map on the back wall.
It made a big difference to your neighbour.
And at the weekends, because I had no friends or anything like that, I was single. I used to spend my weekends cycling around London and learning all about London. And when you've done that, you understand that London is a rather small area, and you look at the tube, and you can go ridiculous distances around the tube network, whereas if you actually went to the surface, you could just walk from one tube station to another within minutes. So there is sort of a mismatch between the tube network and what's actually going on above you, as it were.
Right.
And so what this app does is, I'll show you the screen there. You can see that?
Yeah. It shows you the exact lines.
There's the tube map on the new Apple map. Here's the Apple map. And so you can pinpoint where you are, so you can figure out whether you want to, you know, it's easier to go from one tube station to the next tube station by tube or
yeah, one of the criticisms of the... Because the tube network map that's there at the moment was worked out by a guy to make it very simple. He did it on his tablecloth at home. But one of the criticisms of it is you don't know which is the nearest tube station based on where you're stood.
Yeah.
The distances are deceptive because of the way it's laid out to join the lines up. So that's good.
And if one line doesn't meet with another line, you might go on the northern line all the way for four stops and then join the whatever central line and go round, and where it would have probably been easier to jump out, just walk across, and you'd have been there. And so it does that. It plots where you are in real terms geographically to the way the tube map is drawn up and gives you the best option. It's good. It's called Real London Tube, and it costs 69 pence.
Excellent. Thank you, mate. DHM, what's yours? Oh, go on then. As long as there's no story about shagging your neighbour up to it.
No, there's none of that.
Cut to the chase, dude.
Where I live in Ironbridge, I got a very, very bad O2 signal. Nothing. Terrible signal. And O2 have released, I don't know, a week or two ago, Tugo, T-U-G-O. You have to be a contract customer, and it works amazingly well. So you can put this little app on your iPad and your iPhone. And so if you don't get any cellular coverage, it'll go straight to the Tugo app, and it'll ring on your phone or on your iPad, which is weird. So you imagine you've got like no signal on your iPad, where your iPad hasn't got a cellular connection, but you've got one on your iPhone, and a call comes in, and both your iPad and your iPhone ring at the same time. It works really, really well, and you can text message and everything else.
Excellent.
I've been really struggling whether I'm going to stick with the iPhone or move across to Android, and this app has made me decide to stick with O2 and to stick with iPhone.
Okay.
Good app.
DHM, what have you got for us?
Well, funny enough, years ago, before I lived here, I used to live in a flat in Tottenham Court Road next to this strange guy.
Oh, I remember those days.
Have you got a sore ass?
And anyway, he showed me... edit this out.
Before his wife sees it.
No, stop that story.
What have you got for us, mate? Come on.
Right.
I'm going to pee my pants otherwise.
It was a great threesome, wasn't it? Remember it?
Yeah, it was excellent, yes. London, eh?
No one's laughing. Get on.
back in the day. 1969, Camden.
Shut it. DHM, do your pick.
Brewster. It's like a connections app, all in one thing, with your iCloud and your Twitter and your Facebook and all your stuff. And you sign into various accounts and it logs onto your iPhone and goes through your contacts. And it's a really nice way of exploring much more visually than anything else, all your contacts and the links between your contacts. And it says, oh, people you haven't necessarily, you know, been in contact with for a while. It sorts them all out into lists of who's local to you, who's near, who you've contacted most, who you haven't spoken to for a while, and all the relationships between those people as well.
So you talk frequently with Will Green, according to that.
Yeah, that's
reminiscing
true.
About old shags in London flats.
Yeah, yeah. So frequently there, we've got Will there and Don and Thingamy, what's her name? Jodie Spangler. And Andrew Drew, yes, all those famous people. I don't speak to you ever, according to this app.
Yeah, bollocks.
Oh, bugger, eh?
I need to get a toilet in here.
I think he's picked his favourites, to be honest with you.
I think he has too.
I think that's a favourite screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, encounters back in the day with gentlemen of certain tastes.
Mm.
Now then, my pick is dead simple. It's from Gear 4. It's available online, or you can get it at the HMV store of your choice. And it's a leathery bound iPad cover for the iPad Mini that you sit in, and it's got the whole thing, and it's got the magnets, and it's £29. And it actually works, as opposed to the iPad cover that you buy from Apple, which is a piece of shite. This works. So there you go.
Can I say something?
Go on.
Good pick.
Thanks, man.
You always say that.
No, it's good. The 12 South competition. The winners about to be announced.
Before you do the 12 South competition, Ewan.
Oh, my God.
I've got to go. Sorry.
Yeah. All right, go. Just go.
Go. Bye, Will. See you another time.
Oh, don't kiss. Just go.
We should write a book, Tottenham.
How I used to live.
It's not bad enough you talked about a bit of dry route. You're onto that as well. Right. The 12 South competition. There's a few notable mentions before we announce the person who was drawn at random from the correct answers. The question was, if you wanted to get a book, then all you had to do was tell us what the price of the book was based on the exchange rate at close of business at 5 p.m. last Friday. And the correct answer was £53.21 ish. But special mentions have to go out to York Woodford Smith, who wrote in and said at 5 p.m. The exchange rate was 1.530310, which is the exact cost of the item that you mentioned, is £53.21 .668551659903.
Holy wow.
So that's the most accurate answer that we got. Well done, York. A special mention also goes out to Andy Roweth, who got the exact exchange right, perfectly correct, but multiplied instead of divided.
Oh!
So he got the... and he also put it in dollars instead of pounds. So he ended up with it costing £120.24, so which it doesn't. It doesn't. It's fine. Bad luck, Andy, but special mention, mate. Love people that cock up like that. And the winner was Paul Markham. Well done, Paul Markham. The price in pounds sterling was £53.21, and Paul wins the book. If Paul sends me his address, then I will send him the book on. Very good. Tell me what size you want as well. Okay. Where can we get a hold of you? DHM? Don McAllister Egan.
Don McAllister? That's me. You can find me over at screencastonline.com, where you'll find all the links to the tutorials, to the magazine, and to the apps as well. And you can find me on Twitter as Don McAllister, as well as on app.net.
Excellent, mate. And as you said, the new Screencast Online mag is just about to be out.
It's just out. No, it came out first of the month.
Excellent. And your screen is frozen on a rather good screen there. Well done.
Who am I?
Kyle is killing happy. A cat.
Oh, my God.
She's not happy. Are you?
Well, no. She's holding you, or you're holding her. I mean, yeah. She looks a bit scrawny, mate.
Yes.
She just bit you.
Huh?
She just bite you.
No.
What's her name?
Oreo.
because she's sandwiched in black and white.
Yep, yep.
Where can we get you, dude?
You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Swagger and even at app.net. No, at Kyle Swagger. And I've got to go put a cat to bed.
Yeah. Other special notable mentions for the book competition have to go to Michael Fitzpatrick, who this very second, not 50 seconds after I've announced the winner, has written in with his answer. Bad luck, Mike.
That's rather nice.
Well done, Mike. I do apologize because it's 5 o'clock. He said he's put the price of the at 5 o'clock tonight instead of last week as well. So bad luck, mate. Where can we get you, Kelly?
Sorry, I'm all distracted because the stream is behind and I'm looking at Kyle's adorable cat Oreo.
Yeah.
You can find me on the unofficial Apple weblog at tuaw.com, and you can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso.
I don't know why you're all thinking it's cute. He hasn't got a frigging word what it's saying. It's speaking Filipino. So, Will, where are you, mate?
BritishMac.com. And also thank you to my company who pay for my time in this podcast. God knows why they do it, but they do. Stoneburn.com.
Excellent. And when's the next British Mac coming out, mate?
You ask me this every week.
Well, because my bloody emails are full of questions. Will you ask Will? Because he never replies to my emails.
Yes, very shortly. I keep saying this, but very, very shortly, and it'll be something extremely special. It's going to be knocking out in the next couple of days a video trailer for the next one, which is going to be pretty
orchestral.
I'm pretty excited about it, really. And then I'm doing the audio and British Mac Plus video one, which I haven't done in months and months and months, which has taken a while.
Orchestral manoeuvres in the You'll Be Lucky.
You wait, Rankin.
me and 10,000 others.
Quality, not quantity. Knocking these old load of old rubbish out every week, every Friday. Mine come out every 6 months, and well, what more can you say? Really, that's about it. Really, I'm not going to cast any aspersions on the quality.
Dude, stop digging.
Yes, I'll stop now.
You can get Dr. Happy Mac at Dr. Happy Mac. If you want your computer fixed and you're anywhere near Siren Sester, you can send it to him or he'll come get it. You can go to the Corn Hall and you can see him with a sign that relates to someone else because he hasn't put his sign out the front. What an arse. DHM is available at Dr. Happy Mac on Twitter, and I think he's probably on there on app.net as well. I'm Ewan Rankin, available on Twitter and app.net with the same username. And we'll be back next week, and there'll be some bloody news, I hope. Even some rumours. Come on.
Yes.
Come on. Have a great weekend. I really enjoy it. We'll see you at the Bash in July. Don't forget, though. Tickets go on sale next week. Ooh.